Thanks for tuning in to the Next Level Church podcast. For more information, check out our website at nextlevelchurch.net.
You may have a seat, and as you're seated, will you help me welcome to the stage my wife, Monica Shepherd.
Good morning.
So this is going to be fun. Literally anything is on the table. Anything, any questions you have about parenting, family, raising kids, dating life, anything at all, text it in. And here's how this works. If you don't text in questions, we don't have a backup plan. And so we don't have a dance ready. We don't have a song. We don't have a skit. We don't have church-appropriate jokes. We have nothing. We have nothing planned if you guys don't text in questions. So this is your opportunity. If I know we've talked about family and marriage and parenting and all the stuff for this past month, but this is your chance to ask real questions. And it's anonymous, so you don't have to be afraid of us knowing who asked the question. But we'll do our best to get to as many questions as we possibly can during this time. Let's see if I've stalled long enough. If we have, we do. How can you raise twins and still make time for date nights?
We live with Rob's parents.
Facts.
We didn't always. We are lucky enough to have my parents in Virginia Beach, Rob's parents local, Rob's brother, his wife, they're also raising kids the same age. And then also being a part of the local church since the beginning and being plugged into groups. And we were cautious, obviously, with people keeping the kids. It was pretty specific who we let keep the kids at the beginning, but we have always been intentional from the beginning. And so it was grandparents that overnight was tricky for a while because everyone's scared of twins. I'm scared of you that have like a three-year-old and a newborn, the different schedules and that's terrifying to me. For us, it was the same, like two bottles and diaper change, same schedule. That felt easier. You just have to be intentional. You have to make time. Even if it was, we kept them on a tight schedule. We sleep trained them intentionally for us, and them going to bed in the beginning, they slept 6 to 6 because of our work schedule and needing them to be up early for us to get to work. Them going down at 6 allowed us to have dinner together and watch a movie together. And for us at the time, that was a date night, and that was intentional. And then sometimes it was people upstairs in the nursery with them. Our pastor at our last church stayed the night upstairs, or his wife, I forget which one he did, so that we could have a night of uninterrupted sleep with the monitor off. Like, people offered, and we took them up on their offers. We took them at their word that they were willing. They said what they meant, and they meant what they say, and we said yes, and we ran. So
yeah, I think the point that you're making that I think is so crucial is being intentional. You can make time for anything when you plan it. And it may be, okay, we can't do weekly date nights, but we can figure out how to do one date night a month. Or if you can't figure that out, one date night every other month, and you intentionally plan it out, and it takes some scheduling. You can't just on a whim say, hey, it's Friday, let me go out and dump these twins off on someone else. You've got to plan ahead and think through it. But with a little bit of intentionality, a little bit, it goes a long way, and you still can make time. We made sure that we did one vacation a year with just us, and so that kids weren't there, and that was super tricky and difficult to do, and it's a lot of times a shorter trip, but we would try our best to make sure that we had some time to connect. And then a key thing that I don't know why no one else listens to us on this one, but a key thing that she said was the bedtime. And like, we never let our kids dictate what time they go to bed. We always did the research and said what's age appropriate for their bedtime. And it was crucial during the baby years that they would go to bed at a certain time, and then that was our time to connect. And so we knew, like, even when you're just like, your bloodshot eyes and you're like so stressed out, you're like, oh my gosh, are these kids ever gonna stop pooping? And, like, even when you're just like at your wit's end, you know, I just gotta make it to 6:30, and then they go to bed, and then we can have some downtime together with each other. So I think that's crucial. All right, let's see what else we got.
All right, we're putting up, how do you handle conflict? Yeah.
How do you handle conflicting ideas, opinions, regarding the Bible with your spouse?
For the most part, we don't have many conflicting opinions regarding the Bible, right?
I mean, I don't think
Hold,
we
please.
Do. I don't think
no,
we do.
I don't think we do. In general, we don't have a lot of conflict, luckily. We talked about that a bit in the last service, and I'm sure it'll come up again. But specifically with the Bible, just a lot of communication, a lot of prayer. We talk through it. I ask his opinion because, as he likes to say, he has the God degree. And he says it trumps my William and Mary masters. So I'm adding a UVA master's right now to see if that helps. But
my degree was 93 credits focused on God. You can add a second master's. It still does not trump a God degree at 93 credits.
So that's how we
Carry
handle
on.
That conflict. We just keep adding master's degrees. No, so I tend to yield to that or ask his opinion. And if I want more information, I study for myself and form my own opinions, and he respects that. But we are a biblically based family, and put that first.
Yeah, I think that was a great answer. I would add to it, what I try to do in all relationships is I try to make sure that we're focused on the essentials, and then you have, from essentials, you have, preferences, and then you have, well, you have convictions, and then you have preferences. And so the essential thing that we have to agree on as Christians is that Jesus died for our sins. And so the only time where it would be like we need to have a come to Jesus meeting is if one of us was like, hey, you know, we don't really believe Jesus is the way anymore. That is the essential thing that our faith is based off of. From there, then, you have convictions. And convictions can differ from each person. And so I try to show, and I think we both show, lots of grace towards each other. If she has a conviction, then it's my role to try to submit as best I can and say, okay, I'm not convicted by that, but we're a team, and so I will try to support you in that. And then the final category is preferences, and preferences is where it's just like, okay, that's just your preference, and we are aligned in our preferences. We both prefer a more contemporary church, and we prefer contemporary worship, and we prefer small groups. Those are our preferences. And so that is a huge thing to establish before you start seriously dating someone or get married, making sure you have the same preferences, because they do matter. And so if you start dating someone who is like, you know, I prefer the Catholic Church, and you're like, well, I like Next Level, that eventually is going to bring conflict. Monica and I have had zero conflict because our preferences align, most of our convictions align, and then the essential thing that we would have hard conversations is always aligned, and that is the gospel and that we're saved. And so I think that helps us a lot. Anything else you want to add to that? Awesome. Keep going. How did you know he, she was the one?
You should answer that because you broke up with me in college.
It's true. So so here, give a little backstory. I was really influenced through my youth group and youth pastor, and it just was like drilled in my brain, don't date just to date. And because some things can happen in there. You can end up having baggage in your life, and so be careful. Make sure that if you date, it's intentional and serious, and that you're dating someone that is aligned with your values, and be intentional about it. And so when I first asked Monica out, it was with the idea of, like, I want to date someone to make sure that they are potential for marriage, not just because I'm lonely or because I'm bored. I want to date, like, intentionally. And so we dated for a week, and okay, I'll submit. It was two.
The lines were blurred. We were very good friends.
Yeah, we were good friends. And so I started, and this is where the advice that I was given in high school, it came with good intentions, and a lot of it served me well. But I was told by my youth pastor's wife that one of the best things she ever did was come up with a list of specific things that she wanted in a spouse. And then she stuffed it in her Bible. And then when she got to college and started dating her now husband, she opened her Bible and found that list. And she was like, oh, it matched perfectly. And so I'm like, well, they're godly. They're giving me this advice. Let me do the same thing. So I came up with a list. And we started dating. And I opened my Bible and found the list. And I was like, well, Monica doesn't match any of the things on my list. And so now that's not on her. It's on me. My list was really stupid. Number one was she must have curly hair. That was number one. Number two was she must be able to sing. It was a really stupid.
I cannot sing.
Yeah. It was a really dumb list. But I was trying to be wise. And in my mind, I was thinking, if this is not going to be someone that I'm going to seriously pursue, I would rather break it off now before we get too attached than, date for a long time. And then 6 months to a year, say, hey, you know, you're not the one. And so I called it off, and I intentionally was trying to guard her heart and trying to be as kind as I could.
Absolutely. And that's huge. That's big advice. If you're in middle school, I don't know if that's a thing, but high school, college, that's
middle school
a huge
is a thing.
I know it's a thing, but like they're not, I don't know if they're there emotionally to be like, I'm going to protect this person's heart and not in high school and college. That's excellent advice. If you don't see this, as soon as you know this isn't moving forward, do not lead them on.
Yeah. So then for me, the door was closed and I was like, that's it. It's clear. We're never going to date again.
I cried so hard I threw up.
I didn't know that at the time. Over the next little less than a year, we remained friends. And this is one thing that I think she did incredibly well, is that she didn't allow her hurt to change how she treated me. We remained friends, and she never got bitter, and she never made me feel bad. And she still was very involved in our church, and we were around each other a lot, and we just hung out with each other a lot. But in my mind, it was friend zone, and this is where it will be forever. And then we took students to summer camp, and we had an amazing morning worship session. And it just was one of those, you feel God's presence and you're just like, wow, it just kind of felt heavy. And after it gets done, all the students leave. And I said to God, I'm not trying to put you in a box, but I would love to know who I'm going to marry before I take students to camp again. And as soon as I said that, Monica's name came to my brain and I said, nope, we've already gone down that road. that door is closed. And I'm a little, whenever I feel like God's speaking, I'm a little bit stubborn because I'm always like, how do I know that's God? Is that really God or is that just some random thought? And so I wrestle with it. And so over the next couple months, as I continue to pray, God continued to put her name on my heart. And it became really, really clear. And so we got into the next school year. And when September came, I rekindled the relationship, and thankfully she took me back, and we started dating in September, and at this point I was so sure of things by New Year's Eve, so from September to New Year's Eve, I bought a ring, and we hadn't told each other that we loved each other, we hadn't talked about marriage, and I proposed to her in the middle of a sermon, and it was awesome, and and looking back, if one of my kids tried to pull that, I'd be like, you are not doing that, you know. But for me, I just was so convinced. I was like, okay, I've prayed, I've done everything I could, I've sought God, and I know that this is the direction, and so I'm going to trust that this is where he's leading me, and thank God he did. All right, let's go to another question.
This one.
While we're waiting, I don't know what's happening. There we go. While we're waiting for that question, I will say that idea of the one, I'm not a big fan of. I don't think there is just a one out there for you. I think that you need to be looking for people that you're compatible with, people that you share the same values with, and I think that one can get us in a lot of trouble because every marriage is going to have conflict, and as soon as you have conflict, you start to think, well, is this person not the one? And it's like, no, when you marry them, you're making a covenant decision to be with them forever. You've made that decision. And so the dating stage is where you kind of figure that out, if this person is someone you're compatible with, that you can be with forever. But I don't think there's only one person for us. I think once you get married, there's one person for you, and that's who you're committed to. But All right, let's go to another question. I know that you guys probably rarely disagree. I think that's an emoji.
I had to turn to see what emoji they use because of my old eyes. I couldn't.
However, when you do, how do you usually approach the situation? So we do disagree. A thing that is a strength and a weakness in the way that we deal with disagreement is that Monica is, when she gets upset or frustrated, she will not speak about it, but then when the next day comes, she moves on. And so she's like so task-driven and focused that she's like moved on to the next thing. So at times, certain things don't get addressed because she's like already, like I forgot about it. I don't even remember what that conflict was about. Me, on the other hand, I'm a stuffer, and so I hold on to it, and so it's like 2-3 days later, I'm like, oh, by the way, this hurt my feelings, and she's like, what? Like, that was like a long time ago. Like, why are we still talking about that? And so when we disagree, we've had to learn how do we approach the other person in a way that they're going to hear it. And what I've found is that in the moment of disagreeing, Monica's personality will push back, and she... As a perfectionist and as someone that holds a very high standard of her life, when I say, hey, this happened, her defenses go up if it's in the right then when it happened. And so I have found that it is best if I wait 24 hours and then I can say, hey, I want to talk about this and I don't want your defenses to be high, but we need to talk about this. This has been on my mind. And she receives that a lot better. Anything you want to add to that?
No, I agree. I'm very defensive because of that perfectionism. I'm an Enneagram 3, for those of you familiar with that. And so I want to defend myself instead of listen to him initially. So it is good for us both to take a step back. And usually it's small disagreements. And I can be very sarcastic.
No.
Because I can shrug things off pretty quickly, because for the most part, they're not big things, they're small disagreements. And I can be very direct because while I'm dramatic, I'm not an emotional person. And that's a thing. So I can be very direct, and he's more sensitive than me. So sometimes in my directness, I can hurt his feelings. So if we take a step back the next day, I'm like, what are you talking about? But yes, sure, I hear that. I can fix that. I can move on from that. And then we've had rules of engagement for conflict and conversation from early on, if not the very beginning. I'm not sure when we first
learned about it. No, it was like year 2 that we established some rules of engagement. And this came from most people when they fight, there's no rules to guard their fight. And so it's like the Wild West, and everyone just starts shooting, and it's like, no wonder no problems are solved. And I came up with the rules of engagement actually from watching Rocky movies, of all places. But before Rocky will fight the guy, his opponent, the ref stands between him and gives him these rules. And he says, let's have a clean fight. And I'm like, how do you have a clean fight? Like, how do you punch someone for 12, 15 rounds and it'd be a clean fight? And then at the end of the fight, when they both fought well, they would like hug it out. And I'm like, that doesn't make any sense. They just fought. Why aren't they hating each other? And the reason is because they have rules of engagement that guide them through the whole fight. And so at the end of the fight, if they follow the rules, they end up respecting one another. And so we came up with our own rules of engagement for conflict. And so it's things like we don't name call, we don't raise our voice, we do not bring up the past. That is a very unfair fighting tactic. Where it's like, hey, I need to talk to you about this. You forgot to take the trash out today. And then it's like, well, let me tell you what you did last week. And we didn't talk about that. And like, it's an unfair, it's not dealing with the subject at hand. So we have some rules of engagement that help us walk through these conflicts. But it's a lot of grace, and it's a lot of being intentional and also learning each other's personalities. What makes it really tricky is that I need you to be direct. And so it's confusing to Monica because she is direct, but then I need you to also be kind. And so so there's times where she is direct and I'm like, oh, that hurt. And she's like, I don't understand. I thought that's what you wanted from me. And it's like, yeah, I do. I can't read your mind. I do appreciate you being direct, but I didn't know it was gonna come to that degree of directness. And so we've had to learn, I share this with the last service, but I'll just share with you our last conflict. It was a month or so ago. One thing that Monica has shared with me is that she wants me to be more assertive when it comes to certain things like where do we eat. And my thought is I really don't care. I'll find something I like anywhere we go. I want you to be happy. And so she's like, where do you want to go? And I'm like, I honestly don't care. And she's like, I just wish you would pick a place. And so I kept hearing this. And so a few Sundays ago, she was going one place. The kids were going someplace else. And so I had to get dinner and then deliver it to these places. And so in my mind, I was like, I'm going to be assertive. I've got to run all these places. I'm going to be assertive. And so I picked a place that I thought she would like. And she said, what do you want to do for dinner? And I said, this is what I'm going to do. And she goes, no, I don't want that. And I was like, oh. And I was like, but she can't read my mind. But in the moment, I was like, I don't understand how to play this game. Because I'm trying to be assertive. And you're telling me that you want something else. And now all of a sudden, because of this, I'm going to have to go to 3 different restaurants and deliver to 3 different places. And in my mind, I had already thought through it. And so I ended up doing that. I went to multiple different places and end up delivering the food. And by the time I brought the food to her, where she was at, I was frustrated. And she could tell. And she's like, I don't know what's going on with you. And I'm like, just grumpy. But then the next day, I addressed it, and I said, hey, I know that you could tell I was grumpy yesterday. I just wanted to address this and let you know what was going on. It's confusing to me when I hear that you want me to be assertive, and then I try to be assertive, and you're like, nope, not going to do that. And so we need to figure out how to communicate with this, because I want to try to meet what you want me to do, but also when I do meet that and then you reject it, then I'm sensitive, and I'm like, And so we've got to figure out how to talk. And because I didn't bring it up in the moment, if I brought it up in the moment, her defenses would have would have gone up higher. And so because I brought it up the next day, we were able to have a conversation. She was like, yeah, I understand. That is very confusing. And she's like, here's what I was thinking, and this is why I did it that way. But I understand where you're coming from. We were able to work it out. All right, let's go to another question.
Next question.
As a married couple, what would be a piece of advice you would offer those in their single season? I love that question. Thanks for whoever asked it. I would say that you were created to be more than married. And so do not waste your single years. And I remember as a college student and being at Liberty University, and it seemed like everyone that was at Liberty was there to get an MRS degree. That'll kick in a few seconds. Everyone wanted to get married. All the girls, MRS, Mrs. Everyone was there to, like, get married. And so I kept seeing all these people start dating, and I was like, when's it going to be my turn, and when am I going to start dating? And you put all this pressure on yourself. But I think that the danger is that you so focus on the future that you miss out on the season that you're in right now. And I would say don't waste your single years. Become an amazing, godly person. And take adventures, take trips, and do things. Do not put your life on hold for that season. I believe that season will come. At the same time, I think the best thing that you can do as a single person is love God, serve at your church, and then go where there are other godly singles as best that you can. Put yourself in situations where you have a greater opportunity to meet other singles that are walking with God in the same way that you would want to. Anything else?
It's hard, I think, because we got married the summer right after college. I think it's hard for some people to take advice from us because it was so quick. But I think of our 10 years of being married before we were able to have children of our own, like, I feel like we maximized that time. Like, if all we got was each other, that was going to absolutely be enough. And we took advantage of that by pursuing our careers and taking those adventures. So to piggyback off of what he said, pursue Jesus, get plugged into your church, become who God has created you to be, develop those talents, pursue that career. I am not defined by my husband. I'm better because of him, and Like, he does not complete me. Your husband one day or wife one day will not complete you. Only God can do that. And take advantage of the adventures and the opportunities and friendships. Like, they, after God and Rob and our family, like, my friendships are such a huge piece of my life. And, like, invest in those and be intentional with those friendships. And those can be just an important piece for that relationship piece, as other relationships can be to an extent. So just be intentional again. I know we've said that a few times, but Matt, like, just pour into yourself and be better as an individual at your church, at your job, with your family, and try, just continue to have perspective of what you've been given and how you can give back until that time comes. And if that time maybe doesn't come for you, it is. It's okay. And just continue to trust God and lean on him and seek him.
Yeah, one final thing, and I think every one of us can apply what I'm about to say, whether you're single, married, anyone can apply this. When desperation rises, standards fall. And so be very careful that you don't become so desperate that you're like, well, I'm just going to marry the next person I see. And because marriage is supposed to be for the rest of your life, and it is a long commitment, and you don't want your desperation to lead you to make a decision that you then regret for the next 20, 30 years or whatever. And so when desperation rises, standards fall, and we all feel that. If you're a boss, you felt that, where you're like, I need to hire someone, and then you get applicants, and you're like, I'm so desperate. This guy's breathing. Let me take him. He's better than no one. And then it's like, oh, why did I hire that person? And so I think it's a great thing to remember. Pour into your church family. Pour into your family. Pour in your relationship with God, become an amazing godly person, and pray and ask, and I believe God will bring that person with you, but just be careful of the desperation. All right, I think we have time maybe for one more. How can we as parents teach our young children how to pray and the importance of prayer? I love that question. I love whoever asked that question. A part of our challenge for Family Month was to pray together as a family. And I think that for a general rule of thumb, there with parenting, a lot more is caught than taught. And if you want to teach your kids to pray in front of your kids and pray around your kids. Now, at some point, you're going to have to teach them some things. You hope that they're catching and they're picking up on some things, but at some point, you're going to have to. It's like our walk-off music. At some point, you're going to have to teach them. And so a great thing that I would prioritize is praying with them before they go to bed. Pray at mealtimes. And then giving them, when it's age appropriate, giving them a chance to pray. And it can be a short prayer. The prayer that we taught our kids that they still pray to this day is, God, thank you for this day. We ask you to give us happy hearts. And then we ask them to fill in the third one. Pray for whatever you want. And so they still pray that prayer to this day. But at some point, you've got to teach them and walk through. Keep it simple. Focus on the relationship with God and then model it for them, because so much more is caught than taught. Well, speaking of prayer, let me pray it for us and close us in prayer, and then we'll do a little bit more worship. Let's pray. God, we're just so thankful for your love for us, and thanks for a chance to share with Monica. Thank you for marriage. Thank you for family. Thank you for these questions. And God, we just ask that you would just do immeasurably more than we could ask or imagine, that you would start some great conversations, that you would draw hearts to you. God, we're thankful for family. We're thankful for the gift of marriage. And we just ask you to continue to work in our church, that you would help us to be examples of great godly families and marriages. We thank you today for every question that was asked. And we ask, God, that you would just do immeasurably more than we could ask or imagine. In Jesus' name, amen.
We hope you've enjoyed and learned from today's podcast. If you'd like to connect with us further, you can check out our website, nextlevelchurch.net, or find us on Facebook or Twitter.